The presence of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in our region means attention to the works of William Shakespeare is automatically higher here than in other places. And the attention is not just focused on today's presentation of Shakespeare's works. You're about to meet someone who put in some time researching Shakespeare in this form.
Tonight, another imposing list of players from stage, screen, and radio join us in bringing you Shakespeare's delightful fantasy, Twelfth Night, which is the concluding play in Columbia's 1937 Shakespeare cycle.
That's right, Twelfth Night on Columbia, CBS, in the late summer of 1937. Both CBS and NBC ran shortened plays on the radio on Monday nights that summer. This is before TV began broadcasting. Ashland's Michael Jensen focuses on the competition in a book called The Battle of the Bard, and he joins me in the studio. Michael, good to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Good to see you, Jeffrey. Thank you for having me on.
So this is very far from your first writing about Shakespeare. Give us a bit of a sketch of your overall work. Just a sketch.
Should I mention all 300?
Yes. You got the number there. Anyway, we're good.
Well, it'll get us to the end of the it'll actually get into your food segment. I first started writing about Shakespeare when I interviewed Mel Gibson, as a matter of fact, about his 1990 Hamlet movie. Mm-hmm. And that was published in Shakespeare on Film Newsletter, which has been absorbed into a journal called Shakespeare Bulletin. He said some things that were rather insightful and helpful. When I saw the film, because I knew what was going on behind the scenes and why certain choices were made as they were, and that got my feet wet. I was at a time in my life where I was looking for a new direction in life, and I knew I was, I mean, I had been writing, but I wanted to write more and more about Shakespeare. And so that opened a lot of doors for me.
So this book, I notice, is from a series on recreational Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. Is this sort of like Shakespeare Light or something?
Well, not by intention. I'm one of the general editors of recreational Shakespeare, and what we're looking for are books by new voices that look at the recreations of Shakespeare and how they have become sometimes changed beyond recognition, sometimes quite recognizable, as in the radio productions that I wrote about. Shakespeare in Comics is another book in the series. It's already out. We have one coming on children learning to do Shakespeare in performance, and yet another coming on Shakespeare as a fictional character and how different fictional incarnations look at his, in quotes, genius.
So Shakespeare, many genres, many formats. And yeah, it's interesting that, as you point out at the beginning of your book, The Battle of the Bard, that when you begin to peel back the curtain on Shakespeare audio, there's a lot to be found there.
There's a lot to be found there. Literally hundreds and hundreds of broadcasts and recorded books, speeches if you go back far enough. You can go back to the late 19th century and you'll find famous actors doing speeches on recordings. There's a whole lot. And it is the most neglected area of Shakespeare performance studies.
So let's capture the scene here. This is the summer of 1937, mm-hmm. and we should point out that radio had become a big enough force by the autumn of 1938 that we had that War of the Worlds broadcast with Orson Welles and everything. So I mean, it was already making huge changes in how Americans lived their lives in their living rooms at that point.
It was indeed. Remember, this is basically still in the Depression, 1929 to 1939, and people could not afford to go out and have a good time, most of us. So those in the middle class and the lower classes economically probably could afford a radio, and that would bring them hours of entertainment every day of the week.
For free.
For free.
Other than the cost of the radio, sure. Yeah. But, you know, Shakespeare for American commercial broadcasting does not seem like an obvious choice for the broadcasters at the time. And they were the two big ones. We had CBS, the Columbia system, and NBC, the national system, with two channels, red and blue.
Right.
One of which became later on ABC. So why then this choice to go with something that seems not like the best commercial choice?
Well, it wasn't a commercial choice. Indeed, there were no commercials except for the networks that sponsored the show. They were called sustaining programs. And there was a Federal Communications Commission rule that networks had to have a certain number of programs that were for the public good because the public owned the airwaves legally.
Still do, we should point out.
Yeah, though the enforcement of it is comparatively lax.
Yes.
By 1937, both CBS, NBC, and Mutual, the other network, took the rules very seriously and were willing to put money into putting on really great shows for the prestige that it brought them. The prestige was in part important because a lot of people, social commentators, preachers, and others, they tended to look askance at radio. Radio was, you know, something bad, something that was not good for America. However, if they put on really great programming, especially commercial-free programming, then they could point to those programs and say, look, we're doing the public really great service here with these shows.
So a way to establish their cultural bona fides while Fibber, Mickey, and Molly make all the money.
Exactly.
For example, okay. We're talking to Michael Jensen about his book, The Battle of the Bard, about the two major commercial radio networks in 1937 going head-to-head in the late summer with live Shakespeare broadcasts on the air. Join the conversation on The Exchange. Questions, comments are welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. The story actually does predate 1937. And so you point out that Shakespeare was on radio fairly early in the medium.
Yeah, back in the 20s on local networks didn't really develop until 1926. And then they started growing from their moment of development. But even prior to that, they were on local stations.
And were we talking full versions of the plays or condensed versions?
I only know of one full version of the play in America, and that was a broadcast of As You Like It at St. Olaf's College. And I don't have the date fixed in my mind, something like 1924, 5, mm-hmm. Maybe 6. It was earlier. I believe it was 1922, because it actually predated what is well known as the very first broadcast, which was a BBC program that had three scenes from Shakespeare. Everybody says that's the first. It wasn't. It was the St. Olaf's College broadcast.
Does St. Olaf know this? Do they have a marker or something?
You know, I've never called and asked.
Oh, wow. That'd be fun to find out.
I'd just love to get a receptionist to put that question.
That'd be great. Shakespeare plays obviously tend to be somewhat longer than a commercial broadcasting format. So how did the producers modify these programs to fit 1 hour time slots, or I guess even shorter in one case?
Well, 15 minutes in one case, yeah.
Wow.
And there were sometimes shows that where an actor would be brought in to do a scene from Shakespeare or just a really great speech. John Barrymore, who was the star of one of the two competing programs and we talk about in the book, he did the To Be Did Not To Be speech on a disaster of a program called the Dodge Brothers Hour once upon a time. He was drunk when he did it. That's one of the reasons it didn't come off well.
Yeah, I understand this is a fairly recurring problem for Mr. Barrymore late in his career.
It was, and even earlier, but it got worse over time, as people with a drinking problem often do get worse over time.
I almost snagged a version of him doing the reading of To Be or Not To Be from a 1941 movie, but it was a little on the scary side. Very, very dedicated actor, for
was
sure.
Was that Playmates?
I forget the name of it. It was an RKO movie from 41.
Must have been Playmates.
Okay, sounds about right. So let's talk about how the competition then between NBC and CBS developed. I mean, is this just another one of those cases where a network catches wind of the other one getting up to some project and they decide, we're going to have one just like it? Because that's, you know, that still happens in TV.
Yeah. Yes and no. There's more to it than that, but it is also that. In May of 1937, CBS announced that it was going to put on a summer Shakespeare series. Every Monday in July and August, they would do a one-hour version of Shakespeare play. NBC was absolutely incensed by that because they'd already done Shakespeare 70 times over several years. And they felt that that the Bard was their Bard and that CBS was poaching on their territory. So they said, we're not only going to put on a competing show, we're not only going to put it on in more or less the same time slot on more or less the same days, we're going to hire America's best-known Shakespearean actor, John Barrymore, to star in our series. And they also claimed that he would write it, produce it, direct it. He didn't do most of those things, but that was what the publicity people put out there.
This was an all-out war between two highly powerful and highly successful competitors, and they really seemed to bring all of their tactics to bear on this battle.
They did, though CBS worked much harder at it. They hired a enormous group of people to publicize it. They sent people around the country to talk to local libraries, local stations, trying to gin up interest, where NBC basically just invited some college professors to show up. So CBS got a lot more publicity for it, except that the press knows a good fight when they see one. And so there was a lot in the trade papers about how they had their knives into each other, even kind of making things up. There'd be a press release that didn't really relate to the Battle of the Bard, and somebody in one of the publications would treat it as if it related to the Battle of the Bard.
It was that important a competition.
Yeah.
Michael Jensen is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's a Shakespeare scholar living in the Ashland area, and his book about 1937 and dual broadcasts of Shakespeare between NBC and CBS is called The Battle of the Bard. You're welcome to join the discussion on the Jefferson Exchange. Some questions about that time? Maybe you're actually old enough to remember these broadcasts?
That would be lovely.
Love to hear from you. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So what was the day of the week and the time slot for these?
Monday, 8 p.m. for the CBS series, 8:30 for the NBC series. And that was strategic, I believe, though I haven't found a document that says let's use this strategy. But the very popular show, The Johnson's Wax Program, starring Fibber McGee and Molly, was on from 8 to 8:30 on NBC's Red Network. So they put the Streamline Shakespeare with Barrymore on at 8:30. It was on the Blue Network, but people could easily switch over after listening to the very popular show.
All right, so we actually do get to Fibber McGee and Molly here. Then they actually did the lead-in for Shakespeare.
In a way, yeah.
Wow. So.
And they made fun of it on the air.
Did they?
Yeah, they did.
Fibber McGee and Molly made fun of Shakespeare on the air.
The night of the first CBS Hamlet broadcast, the Fibber McGee and Molly had a character who Fibber meets on a train who's going to New York, I believe, to do Shakespeare on the radio. And the character's a complete buffoon.
Gee, who was that supposed to be?
I wonder.
Really? So, all right. So then two obvious questions here then. The responses from first the critics and second the audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. the critics were mixed. They, you know, obviously, critics don't speak with a monolithic voice. So some were praising, some were despairing. Critics often like to sound smarter than the people they're criticizing. And so there was a lot of snide remarks. My grammar's going in my old age. There were a lot of snide remarks. On the other hand, when it was all said and done, the few people who looked back on each series and wrote about it tended to write fairly respectively. Mm. There was some... What a waste of time. People would rather hear Jack Benny. But they seem to feel that it was more or less worth doing.
There are audio clips extant, like the one we played at the beginning of this discussion,
yeah.
And some of which you provide with pictures. And thank you, by the way, because we got that great picture of Leslie Howard and Rosalind Russell for our website.
Oh, great.
From michaelpjensen.com. Listening with your ear from this time, I mean, can you get something of Shakespeare out of this? I mean, as somebody who appreciates Shakespeare, can you do much justice to Shakespeare in 45 minutes to an hour?
Oh, no. But having said that, that doesn't mean it's a complete waste of time. There are wonderful things in it. The CBS Taming of the Shrew with Edward G. Robinson as Petruchio is wonderful. The Julius Caesar that CBS did with what they call an all-star cast, though I'm not sure that a lot of them are known today, is really good, solid, cut-down Shakespeare. The opportunity to hear John Barrymore do Macbeth, which he did not do on stage, is actually very, very useful for those of us who have studied his career and have heard that by the time he was on radio, he wasn't as good as he had been, because he's really rather good as Macbeth, and it makes my appetite wet to somehow get him to do it on stage and go back in my time machine. I have one, and see that staging.
So I've asked about the critics. I haven't asked about the audience response to this. It obviously would have continued into a second summer if there'd been a great audience response. Yeah. I'm guessing there wasn't a huge one.
There wasn't. In fact, CBS got out of the Shakespeare business pretty much. There were only five productions over the next 20 years that CBS actually approved of. There were an additional three where somebody else had control. There was a sponsored show or something like that. Orson Welles did a couple, and he chose his own material. But NBC kept doing Shakespeare, at least for the next few years, though in different venues than they had done it before. And then after those few years, he pretty much went off the air till 1950.
And what happened in 1950?
Oh, 1950 was fun. Sir Anthony Quayle of the Shakespeare Memorial Theater in Stratford-upon-Avon contacted NBC and asked if they would repeat the programs. I have tried to find out why, and I have failed. If anybody knows, please call. NBC cut them down to 15 minutes. They'd been 45. Excuse me, I said 15 minutes. I meant a half hour. Mm-hmm. They'd been 40. They cut out 15 minutes. And then they broadcast these shows that made no sense because they had to put all the scenes together as if they were one big scene. So that led to a sustaining comedy series called The Magnificent Montagu, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. That led to NBC...
No, we're good.
Okay. That led to NBC commissioning some additional Shakespeare programs in England, which – and they aired two. They were going to do eight, but I guess they weren't very successful. And it led to a man named Jennings Bryant of the formerly great station KMED in Medford before it became a hate talk station to contact his friend at NBC in Los Angeles, Andrew C. Love, to come up and visit him in 1950. For the hunting and the fishing, and to see if this thing that was then called the Oregon Shakespearean Festival was worth putting on the air. Well, Andy Love was the go-to literature to radio guy at NBC at the time. He came up, he liked what he saw, and in 1951, the Oregon Shakespeare Festival had an annual broadcast on NBC, and that lasted until 1974.
Wow. Okay. A good long time for the Shakespeare Festival. Interesting because the Shakespeare Festival was in its third season during this Battle of the Bard in 1937, and I gather people couldn't hear it, hear where the Shakespeare Festival is?
I was really hoping you wouldn't ask me about that. I think I made a mistake in the book.
Oh, okay. So it was on the air in this.
No, it wasn't on the air here. However, I read Ron Kramer's book called Pioneer Mics, an excellent book, by the way. I highly recommend it. It's on the history of broadcasting radio and television in Oregon. And he makes the point that even though there were not affiliated stations here, you could get signals from Portland, San Francisco, Salt Lake.
Sure. Okay, so you could have heard the Shakespeare Battle in the Rogue Valley in 1937. All right.
Very possibly.
All right, so this is the year that CBS and NBC slugged it out just for a few weeks in the late summer. It's all captured in Michael P. Jensen's book, The Battle of the Bard. Where can people get the book quickly?
Well, first of all, you don't want to. It's $69. You don't want to spend that kind of money on it. However, it is my hope that maybe the Ashland Library will get a copy, the Medford Library, local libraries will get a copy, and that you could read it that way. If you have to have it, Amazon.com.
All right. The Battle of the Bard by Michael P. Jensen. Mike, thank you for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.